So if you think that it's only, you know, harsh winter weather that's related to scours, I can't think of a more ideal time to have calves than May and June on grass in the sand hills. It would be, you know, just ideal weather conditions. And still, if you look at the black bars along there, you can see when those 48 calves died. So we start off in about the fourth week of the calving season, step up a little bit, and then every week of the calving season, this ranch is losing about 8 calves every week. 48 calves altogether. All right. So when we ask, well, what about those calves? Why? What are the characteristics of those calves that caused them to die? Help explain why they died. Well, one of the things was the age of their mothers. All right. So the risk for a calf to die if its mom was a 2-year-old heifer was much higher than if its mom was a 3-year-old cow, which was still much higher than if that was a mature cow taking care of that calf. So why would that be? Does that seem unusual to any of you? Anybody have any reason why you'd think that calves from 2-year-old heifers might be more likely to die from scours? Okay, colostrum. And there's really two characteristics of it, I think. So we might argue that maybe those calves had a little less immunity. Okay? Lower antibody quality and maybe lower volume of antibodies from 2-year-old heifers. So those heifers haven't been exposed to everything yet. They haven't really developed those antibodies to put into the colostrum in the first place. They may have less volume. And another thing is, they're probably just not quite as good mothers yet, right? They haven't learned how to be good moms yet, all right? And so all those things may influence how much, what the quantity of antibodies that calf might have absorbed, all right? So eventually they get better at that, and we see less losses. And this is something that's been seen by a lot of different researchers when they look at calf scours. So we're just happy that it showed up in our study as well. Now, I told you this was an intensive grazing herd. So every couple of days, they're opening the gate and they're moving cattle into a fresh green grass. All right, so it's a tight bunch group. They're moving through the gates. You train the animals for a certain kind of behavior, which is that when you open the gate up, they go through it, right? Because the cows know when that gate's opened up, there's better grass on the other side. That means that sometimes they leave their calf behind, go get the grass, and then they'll come back and get their calf later on. We wondered, well, gosh, what if that calf was born that day? And they opened up the gate and the cattle went through. Maybe that calf didn't get that same mothering up that it would have gotten on a day, you know, when the cows stayed in the same pasture. Does that make sense to you? Well, in fact, calves that were born on the day of a pasture move were almost twice as likely to die from scours as the calves that were born on those other days. So it sort of makes sense that might be the case. Age of the calves at death, well, I showed you data like this earlier. So most of the calves died between 7 days of age and about 15 days of age. And very few died after 3 weeks of age. All right, and that didn't matter over the course of the calving season. So from the beginning of the calving season to the end, it tended to be calves between 1 week of age and 2 weeks of age that were dying from scours. All right, so as they moved through their window of susceptibility, they were more likely, that's when they died. Now, but here's the interesting thing. If we look at when that calf was born and its probability to die later on in the calving season, you know, die from scours, calves that were born in the first few weeks had a very low probability of dying from scours. But if you were that unfortunate calf that was born towards the end of the calving season, your risk for dying from scours was much higher. So progressively greater and greater risk dying from scours as the calving season progressed. Now, why would that be? Yeah, so excellent. I like the way you think because that's the way I was thinking about the problem. Yeah, so those first few calves, they were born into a better environment than the last few calves. So let's think about how that environment changed over the course of the calving system. All right. First of all, we got more and more calves, so this susceptible population is growing all the time, and we've got this multiplier effect. So the source of these pathogens that we're talking about from one year to the next is the cow herd. All right. Now they don't shed very many, but they're the reason. I can tell you in Nebraska, we have hot summers and we have cold winters, and these pathogens that we're talking about just don't survive out there from one year to the next. We often think about, you know, this pasture being contaminated, but it's the cow herd. The cow herd is where those pathogens survive from one year to the next. The cows then start to disseminate those pathogens, small amounts, but the first calves born get a little dose of that infection. Calves are excellent at growing up big numbers of these pathogens. So they're the big multipliers of the pathogens. And so those first calves that are exposed, they grow up a big load, chicks, disseminate that in their feces. Calves that are born later can get a bigger dose than that. They can grow that up into an even bigger dose, and it becomes overwhelming. So I'll try to illustrate that. You got the cow herd that's the source of the pathogens in this new calving season. And they expose the first calves that are born, who are going to, you know, shed higher doses of that. They're going to expose calves that are born later on who make bigger and bigger doses of it until we have this overwhelming load of exposure. All right, and so that's why over the course of the calving season, this exposure, opportunity for exposure gets worse and worse. All right, so just like with the dominoes, we've just told you at least everything that I know about this problem, this disease problem with calf scours. We start out with the dominoes and we said the same thing. What do we need to know about dominoes falling down? Then we can think about what we can do to prevent it. So given the information that I've told you, how can we start to think about controlling this problem? Well, I gave you three different ways that we can control infections, and there are only three that I know of. Eliminate the agent, keep it out, increase post-resistant, or prevent effective contacts. And I'm going to cross one of them off the list right now because I already told you these pathogens that cause calf scours, they're endemic, they exist on all cattle herds, and we don't think it's likely that we can go in and eliminate most of these pathogens from the herd. All right, they exist in the cow herd. We're just not going to get rid of them. So let's cross the first one off, and that leaves us with two other ones: increase host resistance and prevent effective contacts. Now, on dairies, they apply these principles by using calf hutches. All right, so you get that calf away from the source of the pathogens, which is the cow herd, as quickly as possible. Put that calf in a hutch. Well, make sure it gets colostrum so that we've got that host resistance. And then we put it in a hutch where it's not going to be exposed to those other infective calves. All right. I went around talking to ranches for years about installing in calf hutch systems and was almost lynched. So I had to stop that. We had to come up with some better system, all right, that would work in a ranch production setting. All right, and just like we already heard, the conditions at the start of the calving system look more favorable than those at the end of the calving system. So let's try to replicate those first few weeks of the calving system over and over again. Let's have 8 1-week calving seasons rather than 1 8-week calving season. All right, so we like that there's a clean calving area. At the beginning of the calving season, those cows went into a pasture where there had not been cows. Calves, you know, until the year before, and we didn't have those older calves that are such a good source of exposure. Remember with those older infective calves? All right. So that was how we developed the Sandhills calving system. The idea is that we put cows into a pasture to calve. Those that drop their calves in that pasture just stay there. We're not mixing or sorting or doing anything with them. They stay right there. At the end of the week, we take those cows that haven't had their calves and we move them on to a new calving pasture. Leave those pairs where they started. At the end of the next week, you know, cows have been calving in that second pasture. We leave those pairs there and we move those heavy cows into the next pasture and so on. So that every week, what we're doing is creating a pasture where all the calves are within a week of age of each other. and we don't have those older infective calves in the same pasture with those young and upcoming susceptible calves. All right, and the system has worked. In the ranches where we've collected years of data, and I need to update my slides now because we followed these ranches up until current time, these are ranches with very meaningful death losses. So this 900 cow herd was losing 50 to 120 calves every year from scours. Implemented the system in 2000, and they've not lost a calf from scours since. They've only treated a few calves for scours in the last 8 years, and most of those have been, all of those were in the first year, and they just got nervous when they saw a few wet tails, and they treated a few of them. Okay, so it's been very successful. Minimal to no antibiotic use, so we measured how much money was spent on various medications for treating scours, and we saw this huge reduction in the medication costs because we don't have calves that need to be treated. Going back to Terry Clements and the article on successful farming, he says this is the number one thing I've done over the years that has benefited us economically. All right, so this system has worked, and I want to point out that we've benefited animal health and well-being. Calves aren't dying; they're not getting sick. We've increased the financial advantage to the rancher. And we've done that using less drugs and those concerns for public health. And we have less of a public health concern because of those pathogens being distributed out into the environment. So a lot of good things going on here. And again, I want to point out that none of these concepts are new. These were concepts that were being espoused back in the 1930s. In Lincoln, Nebraska, the head of my department was Leonis Van Ess. He wrote this landmark text about animal hygiene, principle of animal hygiene, preventive veterinary medicine. He talked about these same types of issues. He said those more particularly concerned with the food-producing animals must think in terms of hygiene, for their success is in no small measure dependent upon their knowledge of the subject. All right, so with that, I think we're going to take questions later, Ryan. I'd be glad to talk with any of you. You know, please call me in my office or visit our website to get more information. There's some materials in the handouts here, but I appreciate your time and attention.
Next, I'd like to introduce Dan Gibbons from Auburn University, at who, as well as Dave, is a veterinarian. And we'll let him continue on.
Can you hear me okay in the back? The privilege to be here with you. And I'm going to continue on this topic of biosecurity and biocontainment. As we do that, it's really helpful for me to make sure I understand terms. I'm also going to focus on a little different disease. I'm going to focus on bovine viral diarrhea virus. But just to make sure that we understand it, if we take the back row of individuals at the table over here, odds are that if each of those are producers, if you run the statistics, one of those individuals probably has some persistently infected animals on their farm. And as we define terms, biocontainment means that if it's the lady at the back table whose farm has the persistently infected animal, biocontainment means she keeps it from spreading throughout her farm. So she's concerned about biocontainment. But everybody else at that back table is not so much concerned about biocontainment with BVD if they don't have it to start with. They're concerned about biosecurity. They're concerned about bringing the pathogen onto the farm. As we talk about this, the whole goal of our session this morning is to develop plans to minimize disease. I think it's important as we talk about this, the goal of biosecurity is to minimize the total cost of disease. Well, that's a nice, ambiguous statement to make, but what do we really mean there? Well, I want to challenge you to apply this to your own situation. What we mean there is we want to minimize the production losses due to disease. But that's not the total cost of disease. The total cost of disease occurs when we add in the production losses plus the production losses due to biosecurity. What do I mean there? What I mean there is if your biosecurity means that you move the animals more, if you do things that actually decreases their productivity, you're dealing with a situation where your biosecurity procedures may actually affect production. And then we have the cost of the biosecurity expenditures. Okay? The glue to glue the dominoes to the table cost us some money. Okay? The vaccines to vaccinate the calves cost us some money. The total cost of disease is when you add these three things together. What's your total cost of disease? All of us have a cost of disease, whether we have the disease on the farm or not. Your goal for economic purposes has to be to optimize the equation. Okay? If, for instance, I tell you that you can minimize BVD on your farm by minimizing contact with all other wildlife, therefore you could go home and build a 12-foot-high deer-proof fence all the way around your operation. Well, that might keep BVD off your farm. You might drive the production losses to zero, but your biosecurity expenditures are going to be so high, there's no value in you doing that. So the goal in the process has to be to optimize the equation. You want your financial inputs for biosecurity to decrease disease to a level that your total cost in the equation are going to be minimized. So as we think through bovine viral diarrhea virus, we want to consider this. What are the practical biosecurity measures that will minimize disease but not cost so much that will optimize the equation? To me, that's the beautiful thing about the Sandhills calving system. Is the Sandhill calving system doesn't cost a lot of money to implement on most farms. And therefore, your cost of biosecurity expenditures and your production losses are minimal, but it really drives down this loss of disease. So as we look at bovine viral diarrhea virus, and as we look at what procedures we want to put in place to minimize that, to optimize this equation, we have to understand, first of all, what are the production losses due to disease? I love when Dave shows those slides with all the calves lined up dead, because it motivates all of us to realize there's a great risk in that disease, and therefore we need to minimize that risk, and we go home and we make changes because of that. We need to understand that our perception of risk affects what we do. Okay? Right now, unfortunately, in the southeastern United States today, if you're selling tornado insurance, you've got a really easy market to sell in. It's not that the chances of a tornado are any higher tomorrow than they were 2 weeks ago. But because everybody in the Southeast, because of what happened last night, understands there's a real risk. And since they understand the risk, they put security measures in place so that they hopefully don't experience those losses. In some ways, we need to realize that that's the case. But we also need to realize the risk from things that aren't as dramatic. I'm talking about things like, and my analogy would be termites. Okay? Termites don't make the news. Okay? But termites are a tremendous impactor on the financial well-being of individuals. Either your house falls in because they chew out the foundation, or you can't sell your house for as much money because of the termites. So we need to realize, just because a production loss may not be making the news this week, we need to appropriately assess the risk. So those are some broad comments on biosecurity and biocontainment. But let's specifically look at bovine viral diarrhea virus. We have to understand some of the ecology, some of the way this virus spreads so that we can implement changes. Many of you are very familiar with this. Let me review it for you just to make sure that we're all on the same page. As we look at bovine viral diarrhea virus, we can have acute infections. Okay? These acute infections, if the animal is pregnant, can result in fetal infections. Fetal infections at the wrong time can result in persistent infections. I want to make sure we contrast BVD with some of the causes of calf scours. Fortunately, BVD is something we can truly prevent from being on your farm. Most farms, unless you're in the middle of a situation where all of your neighbors are trading cattle so fast and you can't prevent some fence line contact, most farms we can keep BVD off the farm. And that's different from what we deal with in calf scours. We can really affect the ecology of the virus. The key part of this understanding is acute infections, which can also be called transient infections. Those are kind of like the common cold. You get it, you get over it, it's no big deal. Transient infections with BVD. Now yes, transient infections can cause some disease loss. This is where vaccine can play a critical role. Vaccines are important because they can prevent some of this transient loss. And transient loss can look differently depending on which strain of virus you're dealing with and depending on the environment. Okay, if you're in the middle of a snowstorm and you add BVD as a stressor on those cattle in the snowstorm, you're going to have a lot more disease than if you don't have the snowstorm. Or if you have the snowstorm and don't have the virus. Some acute infections won't cause many signs at all.